Today, we are speaking with a BitTensor whale who has publicly stated that he has put 99% of his net worth into Tau. What does he know that we don't?
In today's episode, we sit down with a BitTensor OG, and he's going to reveal why billionaires are calling this the next Bitcoin.
Welcome to the Bean Pod. This is Shane, aka the Jolly Green Investor.
And this is Josh, the Nifty Investor.
Today we are speaking with an OG BitTensor whale who has put 99% of his net worth into Tau. We're going to figure out what he knows that we don't.
In today's episode, we're sitting down with Michael White of BitTensor Fund 1. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, how are you?
Excellent. Happy to have you on here. Let's dive right into it. You are somebody who has come out and publicly stated that you have 99% of your net worth tied up in Tau and the BitTensor ecosystem. Why don't you give us maybe a high-level pitch as to why you think BitTensor truly is the next big thing?
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on. I just don't think there's anything like BitTensor. I've been involved in the crypto space. I'm relatively green in the crypto space since 2019. I really started investing in Bitcoin. And then have, you know, a Wall Street background ahead of that. But as soon as I read the white paper, and this was July of 2022, I started buying BitTensor immediately. And then I have a group of investors I manage money for out of New York and a couple other places. And I started putting all of them into it as well. And, you know, obviously that was a great time to buy. But the outputs and really the commodities that are achievable with a network like this are just unparalleled. You know, you have this mix of experts protocol that allows you to get the best people in the world, regardless of how old they are, what their formal experience level is, where they're located, all contributing towards a common goal and a common task. It's just not something you can replicate, you know, with everybody in an office. It's not something, in my opinion, you can replicate with a closed source model. So it needs to be a decentralized protocol, and Jacob and Alan and, you know, the OpenTensor team were the ones to do it.
Yeah, we couldn't agree more. And I feel like it's one of those things where the more you learn about it and the more research you do, the more you want to put all of your money into BitTensor. Not that we're saying anyone should do that, of course. This is not financial advice. But you kind of alluded to like your professional background. So why don't you tell us a bit more about, you know, your background, where you came from, and how it led you to BitTensor.
Yeah, I went to Cornell. I worked on Wall Street from 2008 to 2013 on the risk arbitrage trading desk at the trading floor at 390 Greenwich in New York at Citibank. And then I, you know, kind of took a 180, went into the nonprofit world for about 9 years after that. And then, you know, during that time, I know it's sort of unconventional to be day job and nonprofit and nights and weekends trading crypto. But during that time, just really fell in love with crypto. You know, the moment I discovered Bitcoin was 2019. I remember reading an article in the Wall Street Journal about Facebook's Libra. You guys remember the Libra token?
Yes. And
within, you know, it was made public. And then within a week, every single top leader on the Libra project got called into Capitol Hill. So that was sort of mind opening to me, because, you know, when the government feels threatened, they shut it down. And that project obviously went away very quickly. So I kind of read between the lines and realized that the crypto in general was going to be something special. And then in 2022, we had just moved out of New York down to the Dallas area. And, you know, I followed a guy who had been a developer at Ripple and the Ripple Foundation for a while, and then had moved over. I think he did developer relations for OpenTensor, probably not more than a couple months. But he's just always into and following unique and interesting projects. So I saw that he was at the OpenTensor Foundation, and then I read the white paper and immediately was hooked. And it just, you know, you guys know the feeling. I'm assuming everybody watching this knows the feeling. You know, when you read the white paper, when you realize what this is, when you realize it has the same tokenomics as Bitcoin. And I know that can sound kind of cheeky, because other projects that aren't really worth their weight in anything have tried to replicate Bitcoin, but this is not about Bitcoin replication. You're really taking what works best and has worked best historically from Bitcoin, and you're adding this mix of experts approach to AI and machine learning tasks, and then you're molding them so that it's really an amalgamation of the best of both worlds. And I think it's unbeatable. You know, for me at this point, when I got into it in July of 22, you know, started researching, started buying immediately, it was really sort of a moonshot. At this point, there's, you know, all of that, the risk element of it is completely removed as far as I'm concerned. You know, you have guys like Barry Silbert who are saying this is the next Bitcoin. You have a lot of people who I would you know, deeply trust in the crypto ecosystem, who are putting all their eggs, or at least a substantial number of their eggs, in this basket. And you know, I'm still invested here and there in other projects, just on a very small scale. But you know, for all intents and purposes, there's nothing more interesting to me. You know, from a time management standpoint, don't tell my boss, but he knows this. You know, I kind of do commercial real estate by day. I'm in the private equity world, and then nights and weekends, I'm reading every single thing that I can about Bitensor, about all the subnets, and it's like exponentially more exciting as the project continues on, because now you have all these amazing teams. You know, Bitensor as a network was interesting enough. And then now you have, you know, 128 teams. It's probably a little less than that with deregistration, but you get the point. You have all these amazing teams who are building unique products with unique use cases. And it's absolutely impossible to keep up. You know, I'll post something on X and immediately you see 10 replies, you know, what about this subnet? What about this subnet? What about this subnet? The truth is, like, the vast majority of the subnets at this point, I can't even keep up with them, because it requires really a full-time effort to do it. But I'm absolutely convinced that some of the brightest minds, some of the best teams, some of the most unique use cases for AI are building on Bitensor, and there's no place I'd rather be.
Hell yeah, I love the enthusiasm. We are very similar in the fact that we entered Bitensor quite early as well, before the subnets even existed. And again, it's that growth that you're now seeing. You mentioned 128 teams, the subnets. You know, for people who aren't familiar, these subnets are essentially what are going to power the Bitensor ecosystem moving forward. 128 now, we might move into 1,000 at some point, 10,000, who knows, as much as it can possibly grow. But you published a paper titled Subnet Growth Model. And I think this is very important because it's really going to help provide a framework for investors and stakeholders. Maybe you could elaborate a little bit on this model that you created.
Yeah. So this model was birthed out of a series of conversations I started having last July. The need, as soon as all the DTAO, as soon as DTAO started trading, I think it was on February 14th of 2025, so almost a year ago, it immediately became apparent to me that there was going to have to be sort of a higher standard of information for all these subnet teams. The vast majority of these teams are absolutely brilliant. At the same time, a lot of them don't necessarily have formal reporting experience. And what I mean by that is you invest in a stock, there are going to be certain rules around how you can trade it. There are going to be certain regulations as to when you can release information and what information you're actually required by law to release. Obviously, in the subnet ecosystem, we don't have that. And there's pluses and minuses to that. You know, the minuses is obviously that you don't have a high information standard for a lot of these subnets, really for anything that's formalized. But the plus to that is, you know, that translates to friction. So if I'm an institutional investor, you know, a lot of institutional investors here and now are more or less on the sidelines because there's no real consistent information standard when it comes to subnet reporting. And what I mean by subnet reporting is financial reporting. If I'm buying a stock, I'm used to quarterly reports. I'm used to, you know, financial statements coming out. I'm used to management guidance. You know, I'm used to a standard sort of series of pieces of information that I can then take as an investor and digest. And of course, a lot of this is algo driven now, where you have algos that'll go through and parse all the 10 Qs and all that and get necessary information to trade automatically as a result of that. But there's no standard, obviously, for subnets. So on the one hand, that's a hindrance for a lot of institutional money. On the other hand, if you're like you or like me, that creates a massive opportunity, because any time there's a huge difference in information between a subnet team and an investor, that creates an opportunity to get into an investment before other people are aware of what's actually going on. So, you know, my response to that has been twofold. Number one, I spent and continue to spend a lot of time talking with subnet teams. And the reason for that is I want to get to know them. I want to know what they're doing. You know, I talk with Sam at Templar a lot, Covenant now, but Subnet 3 and 39 and 81. I talk with Arash and the team at Vanta that's also 50% behind Subnet 35 and now Subnet 20. Anytime I think a team has a really novel use case and an interesting idea, I spend a lot of time talking with them. And then the other thing from sort of a formal valuation standpoint, I released a subnet growth model last, I think it was either August or September. You know, I released it because I was hoping it would really encourage a lot of people to, you know, two things. Number one, encourage subnet teams to raise that information standard. So to make a commitment to, hey, we're going to release financials. You know, if we announce a partnership, we're going to release what are the financial implications of that? What do we expect the impact to be on revenue? If I announce a new hire, what's the cost of that going to be on a yearly basis, so that now I can go through my modeling as an alpha token holder and adjust all my inputs and sort of back out to what I think a subnet alpha token price should be. So on the one hand, I'm encouraging teams to be, you know, for lack of a better way to say it, more professional, more transparent. And then the other hand, I'm trying to establish sort of a template. You know, I don't care who uses it, right? I'm not coming out with a subnet growth model and, hey, here's my website, subnetgrowthmodel.com, and you got to be a subscriber, $49 a month to have that. Like, that's not what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to put a sort of a standard out there, so that people have something from an institutional investor standpoint, especially. So if I'm an analyst and I have a formal financial training, I want to create something that they can look at and say, okay, there are people in this ecosystem who are thinking about the same things that I'm required, you know, thinking about things the same way that I'm required to think about them for our investor set. So, you know, it's a very simple model. It's just sort of a twist on the DCF discounted cash flow model, going through and trying to estimate revenues and expenses for every subnet. You know, I would love to see somebody kind of take it and run with it. And what I mean by that is, you know, there still needs to be, in my opinion, some sort of central database where somebody's talking with all the subnet owner teams. And they're saying, okay, we need an estimate of your revenue. We need an estimate of your expenses. And somebody has to sniff test it, not approve it, but sniff test it, so that if, you know, a subnet goes in and puts $100 million, billion of revenue and zero expenses, it's like, all right, that's probably not accurate. But at the end of the day, the point is that you can take revenue and expense estimates from subnet teams, and you can back that out to really an implied yield for every single subnet token, so you know on a price basis where it should be trading.
And is this model readily available to the public at the moment? And if so, where can we obtain it?
Yeah, if you go to my X account, you know, my handle is Here4Impact on X. And if you go to my account, the link is right there in my bio. But again, you know, it's readily available in the sense that it's a multi-page PDF that has all the math. You know, I have it built out in Excel form, so that every time I start looking at a new subnet, part of it is manual, in that you have to have, you know, the estimation of revenue and expenses are manual. And that's what I'm saying. So what I'm doing now is I'm talking to subnet teams and I'm really poking and prodding and saying, okay, what do you think your revenue is going to be? What are your expenses? You know, do you have any kind of side pocket structures, which is a few subnets do now at this point? Have you taken equity from somebody else? What do you owe them? Is it a stream of revenue? Is it, you know, a certain percentage of your emissions for alpha tokens? And there are different games that you can play with it. But as long as you know, from a base level, as long as you have the revenue and expenses that you can estimate, you can then go and put together a simple spreadsheet that'll do the math for you. So again, I have my built out in Excel. What I think is an absolute layup is for somebody to take it and say, okay, I get the math. I'm going to go and, you know, just have a simple interface where all 128 subnets, and that grows to 1,000, whatever, over time, can come in and put in their figures. And I'm just going to do a simple kind of sniff test approval, click a button, and then they're live. And then it shows you, you know, it'll automate, in the sense that all the math is easy. All the math is recursive. You can do the math again and again and again with a new set of revenue. Yeah. So, but it's out there, you know, so I don't have a need to try and build a website that everybody can use. It quite frankly, it's just going to be more time than I want or care to devote to it. But the math is out there, the theory is out there. I think it's a pretty simple but well supported in terms of, you know, historical financial research methodology. And then the other thing that I will say is I talked to Greg Schfey a lot at Yuma. Their valuation framework, I'm imagining they'll come up with more over time. And they're sort of thinking about it from the opposite angle. So I'm looking at revenue mostly at top line estimates and, you know, backing into a value based on revenue estimates from subnets. They're looking at expenses. So they're looking at the cost of input. So if I'm a startup or if I'm a large corporation and I know it's going to cost X amount to provide a certain input, if I can then go and commoditize that input through, you know, a Batensor subnet and use their output as opposed to hiring somebody or using a, you know, a SaaS or some other vendor, then they're backing into it sort of in reverse of what I'm doing. So I think either of those are valid at the end of the day. They're both just discounted cash flow analyses. So the math is not incredibly complex behind it. But I think the goal of both is to show institutional investors that, hey, if you really want to dive into this ecosystem head first, there are multiple valuation frameworks that are taking a serious approach to this.
Yeah, it's certainly a noble idea trying to balance the, you know, the speculation and Wild West element of crypto, which, you know, brings a lot of people into it. But then, as you said, trying to bring some legitimacy and some reporting and, you know, some more traditional TradFi stuff so that BitTensor can become, you know, accessible for institutions. And I think that's one of the main things about crypto is where is the balance? Because, you know, what has made crypto so popular, especially, you know, among newer investors, is the speculation side of it. So you don't want to completely remove that. But then, as you mentioned, you know, there is a gap there. If you can find the value by using more traditional frameworks in terms of how to value subnets with forward-looking growth models and guidance and revenue and expenses,
right?
There can be a huge, if you know, that's where you see the huge potential, the, you know, the 50x, the 100x, where the value that it's hard to quantify it, but if you can quantify it using your model, that's the game changer, right?
Yeah, and that you're hitting the nail on the head. Therein lies the exact opportunity that I think we're all after. So what the dream, right, is that where can I find crypto returns, but with, you know, stock and bond legitimacy? And I think that Batensor has a good, solid chance of being that ecosystem. Mm-hmm. You know, if I want to invest in an AI startup, you know, for all intents and purposes, I'm going to be shut out. You know, if I'm just a regular investor, I'm going to be shut out of that world if I'm a retail investor. But if I want to invest in a startup that's built on Batensor, it's incredibly easy for me to do that. And now I'm making, even in that statement, I'm making certain assumptions. I'm assuming that the majority of equity value for a subnet is going to accrue to the alpha token. And I, you know, as opposed to some side structure, some ownership structure that doesn't include the alpha token. And that's a conversation, right? You know, are alpha tokens equity, or should they be viewed as just a currency on a subnet's balance sheet and then equity is separate? And, you know, I think that's up to each individual subnet ownership team to make that clear. Most of them at this point have made that clear just through their actions and their behavior in terms of what they're going to buy back versus what they're going to sell. Mm. But at the end of the day, these are, you know, not all 128, but a lot of these subnets are extremely legitimate business use cases. And you as a retail crypto investor, you know, crypto can be sort of a four-letter word in some communities, but as a retail crypto investor, you with a laptop can, you know, or a cell phone at this point, can have access to all of these companies before they go mainstream. So to me, it's kind of the best of both worlds. My sort of clanging cymbal in all this has been to try to build legitimacy. You know, so DTaos token started trading last February on the 14th. You know, my goal out of the gates was to encourage people to invest in subnet tokens, you know, obviously with wisdom, because there were a lot of people at that point saying, hey, don't even look for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, like let the dust settle. My approach was like, man, you have no idea what can happen here. And, you know, at the very least, start doing some research, start picking your spots and supporting these teams, because at the end of the day, the way that these teams are support, like you got to put your money where your mouth is. You can say, oh, I love subnet 3, or I love subnet 8, or I love subnet 35, or whatever the number is. But at the end of the day, if you're not if you're not helping them by contributing capital, you don't really love them as far as I'm concerned. I just think that the opportunity here is tremendous. You know, you look at what Sam and his team are building on Subnet 3. Templar at this point is literally the best distributed training in the world is happening on their subnet. You know, to the point where the CEO of Anthropic has taken notice. You know, it's ridiculous. And I could say, you know, I don't want to just talk my bags, right? But I could say that about so many different subnet teams. So what I think, you know, is being created here is an ecosystem where, again, you have the best of both worlds. You can have the legitimacy of, hey, I'm investing in a real company, and you can have the upside potential of, hey, I'm investing in a real company on crypto rails, you know, as part of this decentralized AI protocol, Bittensor, that just offers insane, absolutely insane risk reward.
Yeah, for sure. So I think let's talk about subnets and alpha tokens a little bit more here. So, you know, when we started investing in BitTensor, probably, you know, when you started investing in BitTensor, there were no subnets, no alpha tokens. We were staking our Tau en route for, you know, 15, 20% APY. It was great. We were stacking Tau. Then after the subnet alpha tokens got introduced, slowly over time, the APY of the root staking has decreased. And more people are staking into subnet alpha tokens, exactly what you were talking about. So right now, you can track these things on Tau app or Tau stats. The percentage of Tau staked to subnet alpha tokens is still only sitting at around 17 to 18%, which, you know, it still seems quite low. It has started to increase at a rising rate over the past few months as again, that APY is no longer 15 to 20% on root. It's down to like a couple of percent, right? So now people are like, oh, well, one, we want to continue to increase our pure number of Tau. So finding higher APYs on subnets, which can offer like 50 to 100% yield. And two, just like you mentioned, like people are starting to wake up to the real value of these subnets. So the question for you is, how high do you think this number can go, like the 17 to 18% stake to subnet alpha tokens, and what effect will this have on subnets and the entire ecosystem if this goes to like, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50%?
I think it will absolutely march slowly but surely towards that 40 to 50%. You know, again, the dominant mindset that I was hearing from individual conversations, that I was seeing people posting, you know, a little less than a year ago at this time when DTAU started trading, was don't touch it. Let the dust settle and then kind of see where the bodies lie and then start picking your spots. You know, at this point, like if you are invested in Bittensor and you're not invested in subnet tokens, you know, you do your thing, but I don't know what you're waiting for. I don't know what else you want to see. I'm watching some of the updates that are coming out of these subnets. And the work that is being produced, both from a product standpoint as well as from an academic standpoint, from a research standpoint, is absolutely world class. And you know, when you talk about trading dynamics, so some of subnets, everybody was panicking. You know, around, call it July, August, really last year, ahead of the first halving for Bittensor. So none of the alpha tokens have yet, but Bittensor halved in December, and leading into that halving, everybody was panicking about what it was going to mean for some of subnets. And just for anybody who's not familiar with that, some of subnets being the aggregate total of all alpha token prices denominated in Tau. You know, everybody was because in theory it should over time migrate to one, because, you know, in theory, if everybody goes to sell all their subnet tokens all at once, that there's got to be enough Tau to redeem all of it. In practice, you know, we dipped briefly below one. My memory's fuzzy on it now, but you know, it's been climbing back up from that level. And now as of today, I think it's at $1.18, $1.19. It traded substantially higher out of the gates last February and March. Candidly, the reason for that is, just as someone who was literally glued to the screen, kind of watching it to see what opportunities there were. I think there was probably one big algo trader who, I don't know if he fat fingered something, hit a wrong key, but was just buying every single subnet. And that took the value, and obviously liquidity was nothing at that point. So that took the value of some of subnets, you know, up to the $2 area. And then of course, you know, due to the protocol design, things settled back down again. But at this point, I think you have to look at some of subnets and say that that it's bottomed out, and that, you know, over time there are a lot of voices in this ecosystem who try to overcomplicate things. At the end of the day, it's very simple for me. It's supply and demand. When I'm an alpha token investor, I'm looking for a team who has a good plan. Are they somebody I can trust? So I'm not like everybody's getting all excited about two subnets in particular that somebody bought over the past 48 hours. I'm not going to name names, but if, you know, I'm not excited when I see somebody who hasn't succeeded in building a subnet before buy two new subnets. And it doesn't matter to me where the engineers they're bringing are from. It's just not something I'm going to be interested in. And then when I look at it and there's a massive wallet that's known for insider trading that bought this, you know, 2 months ago before the news is public, I got zero interest in that. And anybody who's following, you know, kind of the action knows exactly what I'm talking about without naming any names. But what I'm interested in, is it a good team? Can I trust them? Do they have a plan? And then are they selling their alpha? It's very simple. If they have a plan to meet OPEX, and there are multiple ways to do that, right? You can either grow your revenue. You can also decrease your expenses. But if there's no real reason for a team to sell their alpha, and I'm not saying it's, you know, the cardinal sin to sell your alpha. If you need to sell your alpha for OPEX, do your thing. But I'm especially interested in teams who, you know, don't need to sell their alpha. Maybe they have a TAO reserve from before, you know, DTAO started trading. Maybe they have other income because of stuff they do, you know, on a full-time basis. And this is just kind of a nights and weekends thing for now until it becomes full-time. But I like those teams that don't need to sell alpha, because that means that somebody's not just dumping on me all the time. So that's what I'm looking for. But it's like, you know, it's the ecosystem is just sort of a dream, because you at this point, you know that if some of subnets dips below a dollar, we've already seen it. If it dips below a dollar or it gets close to a dollar, there's going to be buy pressure that kicks in at the protocol level. And it's a matter of time to me before institutions start taking serious interest in, you know, a certain subset of subnets that I'm invested in particular. And the value of those, like, if I'm an institution, I'm not going to come in, and if I want exposure to Templar, just to take subnet 3 as an example, if I want exposure to Templar and I believe in technology and, hey, decentralized model training is going to be huge, I'm going to come in and I'm going to look at my investment denominated in dollars. I don't need to redeem for TAO at any point. So I don't really, quite frankly, I don't care how many TAO my bag is worth. At the end of the day, I want to know what my investment is worth in dollars. So when the crypto ecosystem at large wakes up to the reality that there are all these incredible startups trading at just mind-numbingly low valuations and starts buying them, their investment is going to be denominated in their head, which is all that matters. It's going to be denominated in dollars. So I don't think it's realistic to say, oh, we're going to be pegged to a dollar on some of subnets because everybody needs to be able to redeem for TAO all at once. Like, to me, that's just never going to happen. People are going to come in the ecosystem. And especially now, man, maybe Bitensor goes to 500 this year. Maybe it goes to 750. Maybe it stays where it's at. But, like, you know, we're all early. So we're kind of in an echo chamber. But if I'm coming to Bitensor over the next 12 months, and, you know, I get in at $500, maybe I get in at $1,000. You know what's not going to be okay with me is I'm not going to be happy watching the price of TAO go to, you know, 2,000, 2,500. It's not going to be like, I'm going to want to go out on the risk curve because I'm a crypto investor. I'm going to want to go out on the risk curve to multiply, you know, my investment. And the only way to do that within this ecosystem is through subnets. So I think you're going to see, you know, on the one hand, you have institutions looking in a big way, and retail also looking in a big way at Bitensor. I think that's pretty obviously established at this point. You know, a big kind of herring for that is you look at the price of GTAO, and it's trading at like 3x NAV right now, net asset value. You know, the reason for that is trading at a massive premium because people who, for whatever reason, maybe it's, you know, maybe they're gate kept from a regulatory standpoint. They can only own stocks. Maybe they just don't have the technical expertise to buy TAO, but they want exposure. That's the only way they can get exposure. So they're willing to pay a 3x premium, which is just crazy. So the demand is going to be there. And I think as people come in and, you know, as they realize what they just bought, they're going to start doing subnet research and realize how compelling all of these use cases are. And then I think a lot of these subnets are going to, you know, maybe we see eventually one subnet trade at a one-to-one with Tau. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if it happened. Mm. But at the end of the day, all that happens, all that investors are going to be worried about are their dollar exposure, not their Tau exposure. So I certainly don't think that sum of subnets figure at one is a peg. I think it's a floor.
100%. I couldn't agree more. And I think you're speaking gospel here. You know, you've articulated that so well. And I think hopefully people who are tuning into this episode are really listening to what Michael is saying. I want you to do a little bit of shilling here. You talked about teams that aren't selling their alpha tokens. I believe Subnet 8, Arash, I believe I've read that they are not selling alpha tokens. Maybe you could do a little bit of shilling and let us know, you know, what are maybe your top three subnets that you are heavily invested in right now, why you like them, what they do, and why you're bullish on them.
I'll shill if you want me to shill. I'll tell you everything that I own. I own Subnet 3. The thesis there is very simple. I think that Subnet 3 will eventually be, you know, either an acquisition target or a strategic partnership target for a large closed source AI company, whether it's Anthropic or somebody else. I think the writing is on the wall there. You know, if you look at what's happening with data center spend, it's absolutely unsustainable. Everybody knows that. They just don't know what to do about it. You know, we're kind of being painted into this corner where we need more data centers for AI, but at the same time, you know, the grid can't support it. As far as I'm concerned, the only option, because people are only going to sit back and look at their electricity bills go through the roof. You know, a lot of places they're up substantially in the past 12 months. They're only going to let that happen for so long before there's sort of an uprising. People just demand. And, you know, these AI companies are going to become the bad guys. You know, Sam Altman is already a bad guy. And if you don't believe that, I can't help you. But
so that's why we invest in BitTensor.
Yeah, 100%.
Right?
Yes. He is the antithesis of it. But you know, all these AI companies are going to be bad guy, whether they want to be or not, because of power consumption, because of what that does to pricing. The only viable solution, as far as I'm concerned, is decentralized training. And I think that Templar is the best in the world at that. You know, Sam is an absolute maniac. You know, I have calls with him occasionally. I just had one with him yesterday. And how did he put it? He said, I have this thought in the back of my head that I'm going to die at the end of the month. And that repeats every single month. And his point was, and I just started laughing. His point was like, there's so much that I need to get done. If I think that I'm only going to be around another 30 days or 15 days or, you know, this month, 3 days. So let me always grind and get to those deadlines as if my life depends on it. And that is genuinely the way that he does business. That's genuinely the way that his team works. You know, when I first talked to Sam at Subnet 3 last February, right after DTAO started trading, he used one word to describe his subnet in particular. He said it's a moonshot. It's going to be a binary outcome. It's either going to do incredibly well or it's going to fail fantastically. And at this point, it has succeeded. It's become his team has become the best in the world at what they do, and it's only going to get better. So at this point, again, the risk, and that's the theme that you're going to be hearing from me. The risk at this point is really substantially mitigated on a lot of these subnets in terms of price action and in terms of the team proving themselves and, you know, product market fit, all of that. And three is one of those for me. You know, it started out as sort of a research subnet that you support from a mission driven perspective, because you don't like closed source AI controlling everything. But at this point, I think their path towards revenue and getting a really, really solid strategic partner backing is clear.
And this is the best in the world trading at a fully diluted market cap of $173 million.
Yes. And anybody else who even tries to do centralized training is trading at, you know, $1 billion plus. So it's substantial. So Subnet 3 is one. I'll call it the Subnet 8 ecosystem. I don't own any 20, but I own a lot of 8. I own a lot of 35. I really like the ecosystem that Arash and his team are building. Again, just a room full of really smart guys. Now, let's talk about this, because Subnet 8 has gotten a lot of pushback. They've gotten a lot of flack. My perception of the reason for that is because there are a lot of people in the potential ecosystem who only want to support projects that are sort of pure decentralized AI use cases. In other words, you know, let's not support projects that are oriented towards finance and making money necessarily.
Right.
So I get that to a certain extent from a mission-driven perspective. I think the other side of that coin is that's the way you attract people into the ecosystem. You know, nobody, this is crypto. Nobody's here for the tech, even if you want to say that you are. So just in terms of being sexy, in terms of being attractive as an ecosystem, we need to create ways for people to make money off of their investment. That should be the primary focus, as far as I'm concerned, of every single subnet, is to bring in revenue and to create investing, you know, multiply investment dollars for people who are invested into their alpha token. So I like Aide a lot. Really what Aide is doing is they're building the rails for decentralized finance, so that if I'm used to trading somewhere, I can now bring my capital to Bittensor. They're generating trading signals on crypto, on commodities, on a lot of different asset classes. And then, you know, in what I think is a pretty clever twist, they take the best trading signals that are generated and then they spin them up into a retail application, which is Glitch. Still beta, as far as I know. The people I know who are using that are making good money in their accounts by using those trading signals. That to me, that ecosystem is so, maybe it's my finance background, you know, coming from a trading desk, maybe it's just, you know, the love of money, hopefully not in a sinful way, right? But I think that's a very valid use case, especially for mix of experts. You know, ideally you have large banks who eventually come to this determination. And I think this is just as true for Subnet 18 Zeus, which is another large holding of mine. You have banks who are now waking up to the fact that, okay, if I believe that I can get a better output through mix of experts than by hiring internally, why wouldn't I, right? If I want a quant team, why wouldn't I go to Subnet 8? If I want a commodities trading team, why wouldn't I go, you know, who wants to trade weather futures, which are growing in popularity more and more, why wouldn't I want to go to Zeus and use their API, knowing that they've already established it, as opposed to trying to do that in-house? You know, this is what we're after here for both of those use cases. So, you know, Zeus is obviously specific rather to weather, but Subnet 8 is really any asset class. But the use case is, I'm a bank, or, you know, from two perspectives. If I'm a bank, I know that I know the commodity that I want, I know the output that I want, and I think I can source it more cheaply from Bittensor. If I'm a trader, I know, you know, maybe I have a certain lifestyle. I just don't want the daily grind of going into an office and working for somebody else every single day. If I'm the best in the world at what I do, why wouldn't I contribute inputs to Subnet 8 or Subnet 18, knowing that I can make far more money and have a lot more autonomy over my life than I could at a bank? You know, I mentioned Zeus, Subnet 18, commodities, futures, but really weather-related futures are growing in popularity. How it works typically in my experience is you see things start trading in London first, then they migrate to the US, then they migrate all over the world. Mm. And that's definitely happening at some of the major trading desks in London, is they're starting to trade these weather futures. The BIS, the large banking organization, came out with a report last year, I think it was last June or July, basically on how in several years from now, every single company, doesn't matter if they're a bank, but especially banks, but really every single company, is going to have risk mitigation strategies for climate disruptions and climate disasters. So that is why Zeus is huge for me, because we're moving into, right? You can blame it on global warming or not, but regardless of what your stance is there and whether the earth is flat, you know, you have to acknowledge that extreme weather events are becoming more prevalent. So companies are going to be forced to, not only by investors, which is currently the case, investors want, you know, some understanding as to what their strategy is, but from a regulatory standpoint, I think it's a matter of a couple of years, maybe five maximum, where every single company now is mandated by regulators to have a strategy when it comes to climate disruption or when it comes to adverse weather events. And I think that Zeus is going to be an obvious logical input, especially like if I'm an insurer and I have no idea what I'm doing when it comes to weather forecasting, or I don't want to have my own team. How easy is it just to go to them and get their API? And, you know, they can do hyper local weather forecasts where, you know, they have like literal weather stations that you can put in your backyard or in your crop field or whatever it is, your Formula One racetrack. And then you'll have miners contributing towards prediction of that weather based on the data that's available from that weather center. Mm-hmm. it's incredibly compelling. So 35 is another one. Kartha, you know, their main net for Kartha is going live next week, I think they said in Discord. So don't quote me on that, but that's what I believe was said. So first week of February, they're coming online. You know, Kartha is a simple one for me. There needs to be liquidity to flow into ecosystems like Subnet 8 and 18, you know, and eventually hopefully more. You know, the mining there is very simple. You commit USDC and then, you know, they use that for liquidity pools. And then you get a yield of alpha tokens based on how much you commit and how long you lock it up for. And to me, that's a no-brainer. What 35, I think, has done very well. You know, they're going to make a simple, intuitive user interface from what I've seen, which obviously goes a long way. But they've also made mining incredibly simple. Like how simple is it for somebody to lock up USDC and get paid for it? I think that'll be a very good one. 46, I like SEBI a lot. Resi, you know, I work, my day job is a commercial real estate. Appraisals are massively expensive. Anything and just like, to an asinine degree, it's just so silly how much people pay, especially commercial appraisals. SEBI, I think, is going to start out focusing on residential with his team. Eventually, he's going to move to commercial. We've had lots of conversations, technically an advisor for 46, but I just think the use case there is massive. You know, the data sets that are available in the commercial real estate world are just prehistoric. There are a lot of companies that build out their data literally by calling brokers and, hey, what did that property sell for? And like, what can you tell me about it? Blah, 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 versus SEBI and his team designing, you know, a system that will predict prices. And I think there's other fun stuff that you can do there, right? Maybe you go to Polymarket and you say, I want to, you know, what I would love to see with Subnet 46 as the pricing oracle on all of this is you can go into Polymarket and say, hey, I'm going to look up a specific address. Like, let's say a house down the street from you is for sale. I can now go on Polymarket and it's listed at, you know, 650 and I think it's going to trade for 675. I want to bet on it. Why not? You know, it's a little degenerate, but at the same, you know, the point of all of this is you create better pricing efficiency by allowing people an avenue to express their directional view. Mm-hmm. The purpose of Polymarket. There's a lot of data that now we have because of Polymarket that didn't exist, you know, 12 months ago before it was widely used. Right. What else? I like 88 a lot. 88 is a great one for me. I like Jake. I like Glenn. I know Jake had kind of an early snafu, made a bad joke on a podcast, but I think their product is amazing. You know, I was looking at it before we came on the podcast. I put 100 tau into Jake's kind of small cap subnet strategy. And as of today, so that was December 22nd. Today is January 28th. I'm looking at my calendar. So, you know, call it just over 30 days, a little over a month. That strategy is up 30%. It's 130 tau now.
Not bad.
So that, yeah, it's these guys, like all the miners on 88 are insanely smart. You know, the difference between 8 and 88, they're related, but they're different. 88 is more about portfolio allocation. 8 is more about generating specific signals for a given asset class. And of course they do multiple, but you know, if I'm a perp trader for Bitcoin and I want to trade, you know, a certain multiple of leverage, I'm going to use 8. If I have a portfolio of subnets and I want to rebalance it periodically, I'm going to use 88. So that's the difference. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I missed. I don't think so. I think those are my major ones.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I think I've heard of most of the ones, but you know, it's just like what you mentioned earlier. You know, you think you know everything about BitTensor, and then we get someone on here talking about a specific subnet. It's like, oh, I got to do some more research into that one, right? But that's the beautiful thing about this ecosystem is there's so much going on, so many legitimate teams. I do want to bring the conversation like out to a more high level look at tau and how it's going to compete with, you know, centralized AI. But one last quick question about things going on within BitTensor, and that is about tau flow. So the recent implementation of tau flow is probably the biggest change that's been made in BitTensor over the last while. And I just wanted to get your quick thoughts on it and how it will, you know, potentially create long-term value for, you know, the real value creating subnets as opposed to kind of the degen ones, or what do you think this has in terms of impact on the ecosystem as a whole?
On the whole, I think tau flow is great. You know, I started a bit of a storm on probably mid-December, like a week before Christmas, because I, you know, texted something and I was a little bit upset because there was, you know, one subnet in particular where, you know, I, it's pretty obvious at this point to see what wallet belongs to whom. And you know, one of the founders of the protocol was out there selling a subnet just because he thought, you know, and I know this from separate conversations, he thought that their, you know, the chain buys were too much because of the TAO flow mechanism. So to me, I just don't think this is an ecosystem where any one individual should have the ability to pick winners and losers. I believe that very strongly, because if we're going to be truly decentralized, nobody should be in control. If somebody's going to be in control, then that's okay. That's a different way to do it, but let's not call it a decentralized protocol. Let's just call it what it is. Let's say, you know, we're going to have a foundation, whoever it is who's calling the shots, and they're going to be able to roll out changes as they see fit. But let's not pretend it's decentralized if it's not decentralized. From that sort of storm that I started, you know, that individual in question responded, you know, quickly and directly. And I think it was all in all very constructive. And I'm hoping that, you know, that feedback was taken into consideration. You know, I don't have a personal relationship with any of the founders of the protocol. I'm not asking for one. My assumption is a lot of people in the ecosystem who kind of see this podcast and know that I like Subnet 8, and I'm heavily geared towards, you know, finance subnets, probably think that I'm just some ex-Wall Street douchebag who's here to make as much money as he possibly can. You know, that's not why I'm here. I know that's not why I'm here, so I don't really care what people think. But at the end of the day, I think it's extremely important that we push this ecosystem towards decentralization. I think that's going to be sloppy. I think it's going to be messy. I think it's going to be highly inconvenient. I think it's going to be arguably less profitable than the alternative, but I think it's the right thing to do for all the reasons that we've already talked about. You know, net at the end of the day, TAO flow is an incredibly positive development for the ecosystem. Because, you know, no longer are your emissions as a subnet owner dependent on price. They're dependent on inflows. They're dependent on, you know, are people actually buying what you're selling? And I think that is the correct way to approach it. And obviously there's a lot more that goes into that, right? There are decisions that subnets now need to make much more carefully about what they're selling when it comes to their alpha tokens, when they're selling them, how they're selling them. Whether they're doing OTCs versus doing market transactions, all of that. I don't think you can argue that TAO flow is not an extremely positive development for the ecosystem. You see the evidence of that in some of subnets. You know, since implementation, we're up from one to, you know, almost $1.20 now. I think it's going to continue to march higher. But I think it's a very, very positive development for the ecosystem. So I had some limited, isolated complaints. You know, the irony, right, is that the owners of Subnet 8 were actually advocating for chain buys to be done away with completely behind the scenes, you know, as everybody was complaining that Subnet 8 was getting chain buys, and then the one of the founders made a decision to sell out of his wallet to try and stop them. So, you know, whether or not chain buys are overall good for the ecosystem, I'll leave up to smarter people than me. But TAO flow in aggregate, I think, is great. You know, I've spoken my piece. I think it was adequately addressed, and I'm just going to trust, you know, every single major term, const, SHIB, they've done the right thing as far as I'm concerned. So I have a lot of trust for them. I have a lot of respect for them. And I think that the people who are at the wheel here are genuinely operating in the best interest of the ecosystem, which obviously is incredibly rare in any space, but especially the crypto space. So I think that should be the primary message that I'm very grateful, obviously, for what they built. It's given us all something to do that's super fun every day, right? And a good way to make money. And hopefully at the end of the day, a means through which we can change the world.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's been a lot of really neat and innovative implementations along the way. I do believe that Const and the others do have the ethos and, you know, BitTensor at the heart of what it's intended to be. I think they, for the investors and anybody involved, they really want to see the best for everyone. Mm-hmm. And I fully, full-heartedly believe that. So I want to round things off here and have a look into the future. What do you want to see happen within the BitTensor ecosystem to take this to the next level this year and beyond? Is it more consumer facing apps, or do you want to see maybe more revenue for subnets, transparency? Like, what is it?
I mean, I think consumer facing apps are good. I'd love to see more consumer facing apps. At the end of the day, I think the real compelling use case that you know, Yuma with their framework, their valuation framework, just really highlighted very well, is that I think probably the most valuable use case for BitTensor is replacing some of these SaaS outputs that are provided by closed source entities. I think the commercial use case for BitTensor is multiples of what it is for retail, for the individual. And obviously, you know, you come up with a compelling commercial use case first, and you use that to, you know, pay the bills, so to speak, meaning you have a lot more eyes on a subnet, you have a lot more capital that's flowing into a subnet, and then you spin out a retail solution and everybody gets the benefit from it. So I would like to see that happen. I'd like to see more subnets entering into partnerships with different organizations to use their outputs as commodities, to use their APIs, because I think that, you know, if I'm managing a business, that's a no-brainer. Now I don't have to worry about hiring. I don't have to worry about payroll, retention, any of that. I'm just paying for an output, and I'm buying the alpha token to protect my interests. But that to me is, you know, if I understand the BitTensor ecosystem, it's a very valuable thing to have in the form of all these commodities that I can then use. Sort of something that I think can immediately be addressed is I would love to see every single subnet ownership team start releasing quarterly financials. You know, I had a little back and forth on X with this, about this with Max, who's at Score Subnet 44. You know, he asked me, what do you want to see? Because, you know, Score's announced a lot of partnerships. So my comment to Max was like, tell us what the financial implications of those partnerships are. Right? Are those research partnerships? Are they, you guys going and giving each other high fives on the weekends? Like, what does the partnership look like? What does that mean for value that's going to accrue to the alpha token? And to his credit, he said, you know, we'll work on that. I would love to see quarterly financials. So I'm talking income statement, balance sheet, cash flow statement, just the three main statements that any accountant or any financial analyst anywhere in the world with any type of training would expect. And I think if every subnet would make steps to do that, I think there'd be a lot more transparency and a lot more legitimacy in the ecosystem. And I think that is extremely low hanging fruit. And the obvious pushback to that is, well, what do I do if I'm a subnet owner and I don't have any revenue? Okay, so disclose, publish your plan for revenue. Tell me how you're going to get there. And if you're a research subnet and, you know, maybe you're going to hit revenue in 5 years. That's totally fine. Look at OpenAI. They're never going to be profitable, but people still have transparent. Well, maybe OpenAI is a bad example, but you get the point, right?
Yeah.
Any other privately held business, financials are made available so that people know how to make a wise investment decision around that. And I think that level of transparency is required. It really frustrates me. It bothers me what people get excited about in this ecosystem. It bothers me when everybody's like, oh, did you see they announced the partnership and there's no explanation of what that partnership means, what it entails, what are the financial implications? You're just like, oh, cool, huge total addressable market. But how do I know they're going to capture any of it? So, and you know, like I mentioned before, somebody launching a subnet who's had multiple failed subnets and there's insider trading already, like that completely wipes off all credibility. So I don't understand why people are getting excited about that. I want to see transparent financials and just sort of the bar of professionalism. This ecosystem's full of super smart people. Just because you're brilliant doesn't mean that you're professional. Let's all be professional. Let's all have a certain standard of information that is consistent, that's elevated. You know, let's show people what you would want to see if you know, somebody asks me, hey, do you want to invest in my business? And I'm just going to be like, yeah, cool. Like you got great t-shirts, but like, what? That doesn't make any sense. You're going to want to know what the financials are. When am I going to get my money back? How am I going to get my money back? Mm-hmm. And what is that money going to be put towards? Is there a responsible plan to steward those investment dollars wisely? And I think every single subnet should be liable for that.
Yeah, no, I think that's something that BitTensor could definitely use, especially as we try, you know, we want to see it move towards an institutional grade asset. Like if we want to see it to get to the global recognition that Bitcoin has, it has to have that institutional appeal. And in order to have that institutional appeal, I think a lot of what you're pushing for needs to be done. And, you know, at some point will probably be done. So look, there's so much to look forward to here with BitTensor. It's got to be the most exciting ecosystem out there. All three of us are, you know, OG long-term BitTensor investors. There's a lot to unpack here. I think we learned a lot today. We thought we knew everything about BitTensor. We know we don't know much about BitTensor, but it's constant learning, right? So look, Michael, we really want to thank you for coming on the show, explaining your journey in BitTensor. You really taught us a lot today. If you guys want to follow Michael on Twitter, you know, we'll drop his handle in the description. We're always going to keep you guys updated about everything BitTensor. So, you know, make sure to subscribe to this channel, follow us on socials, because look, we are still early in BitTensor.
Michael, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, guys, my pleasure. Appreciate you having me.
All right, guys, make sure you tune into the next episode.
That one is going to be a banger.
All views expressed by speakers on the Beanpod are solely their opinions. You should not treat any opinion expressed on the Beanpod as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a specific strategy, but only as an expression of their opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.